Oh yeah, creaking ban idli flaluva pretty salufe idli.
Is it Russian or is it gibberish?
It does not sound like Russian at all. Let me Google Translate. Google.
Welcome to Red Pill, Blue Pill, an open discussion podcast about all things film. We're your hosts, Kat
and Fed. Welcome back, guys. This is episode 9 of RPBP. This is our second to last episode before we finish up the first season. And we have something really, really fun prepared for the 10th episode. So stay tuned. We have a bit of a surprise. But today we're going to talk about one of the things that people don't really notice at first, but then become essential for the success of the movie. And that is music and soundtrack specifically, like composition and everything that it entails. So this is not necessarily sound design and sound mixing. We're specifically talking about music and the composition behind like the theme of a movie. So we don't really know where we're going today. So I'm just gonna start off by saying, when did you first notice music or soundtrack? Was there a specific movie for you, Kat?
Yeah, I guess I don't have any musical background. I know you have a little bit of musical background, but like there's like the famous songs like from Jurassic Park and things like Harry Potter, like stuff that you remember. But I really think like the first movie that really made me stop and think about the music had to be Arrival. Specifically the song by Max Richter. Like that song, it fits it so perfectly. I feel like it has all the emotion of Amy Adams' character. That weird spatial transition that the movie has between the future, the past, the present type of thing. So yeah, I think Arrival for me is the first one.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Damn, that's crazy. Mine was kind of early on. By the genius that is Hans Zimmer. Did you ever watch this animated movie about a horse called Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron?
Oh my god, yes!
That theme, literally, it was the first time that I came out of the movie, and I asked my dad if like he knew the name of the song or the name of the composer or whatever, and then we like looked it up for like 2 hours, and then I would just loop it over and over and over again because I just love the song. So that was my first one. And that's how I actually got into Hans Zimmer, you know? Yeah. That's how I found out about him. But just in general, I feel like it might be a good idea for the listeners too to kind of just, when we mention a composer, just a couple of movies that they've done, right? Yes. So Hans Zimmer is one of like, you know, the bread and butter of music composition. If you're in anything into film, you gotta know that name. But he's done some really important ones, right? Like Inception, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Interstellar.
But he's like one of the main ones, and he's like also known for like really strong themes, right? They're melodies that you can kind of like really remember. Kind of like John Williams, the guy who did Harry Potter.
Yeah.
So like people like that are like really, I think, well known just because their music is so memorable and it like sticks with you.
Yeah, he also did, John Williams also did Jurassic Park.
Oh, okay, there you go. Exactly. So it's that idea of just like using the theme to kind of create not only like a sense of unity throughout the whole movie, right? Because that's kind of what music also does. But give it a personality. Yes. Like, I don't think Jurassic Park would be the same without that kind of... I'm going to put the sound by the way. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What other one? Okay, I got kind of like a foil for that one. So mm-hmm. As opposed to having people like John Williams and Hans Zimmer that do like really strong themes and really memorable melodies, right? This guy, I never remember him, but every time I like a soundtrack and I look it up, it's Alexander Desplat.
It makes sense.
Every time I look it up, it's him.
Like, oh, it's you. Yeah, I had him here for Grand Budapest.
He's the one that did The Imitation Game, The King's Speech, Moonrise Kingdom, all of these, Grand Budapest Hotel, like you said.
I know, yeah, just thinking even his own work within like Wes Anderson, like Moonrise is different from Grand Budapest.
Exactly. He's one of those really dynamic kind of composers. Oh, he also did Shape of Water.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, then this really explains kind of like how dynamic this guy is. But it's interesting, right? Because even as a composer, like if you want to compose for film as a musician, first of all, you're gonna get made fun at by the musician community, right? Because usually like film compositions are usually kind of simple or like not as complicated as, you know, maybe yeah. Classical or something like that. But if you think about it, it's really difficult to compose for film because you have to kind of give the emotional impact that the music brings, right? Because it really, really helps with the editing, but you also have to have it subdued enough so that it doesn't distract from the main point of the story. So I feel like it's a really weird balance that composers have to kind of master. And you can tell with like everyone that we've mentioned, master knowing what to balance and when to bring up the music and when not to. I mean, respect for people that can do
you
that.
You actually reminded me, I completely forgot to put him on my list, but we once had the composer for Godless, the Netflix series. He actually came to one of our classes and he was talking about like when it comes to composing music for films and or even television shows, it's not like the traditional way. Like music is made to serve what's shown on the screen. You know, film is an audiovisual experience. So if the music is not working, it's not going to help the film. And like one of the points that he pointed out was in Titanic, like the big scene where like when they're at the edge of the boat, like Rose is with her hands up, the music doesn't hit at the kiss, but like when she puts her hand behind like on Jack's head, like accepting him. And it's like those little details that I didn't notice until he pointed it out. And I think as a composer, you understand that when you're doing film and stuff, it's not, oh, I want to do it this way, this traditional way. It's to help elevate what's being shown on screen.
I mean, that's a really good point. I don't know on the other end, right? Because I don't compose, but it's almost like the reverse of like the editor, right? Because like when we're given a piece of music, we're always told that cutting on the beat is not always the strongest thing, right? You have to like learn to use the flow of the music to kind of enhance your editing through that. And I feel like if when it's done backwards, right, the composer has to learn how to do that as well. But that's a really interesting dynamic because like if we're both like always on the beat, the idea of tension or the idea of like surprising the audience, because that's really what editing is and what music composition is, gets lost.
No, yeah, it's those little things. I feel like at least for myself, like I don't know how to write music. I don't know how to read it. You know, I listen to it. I like it. Great. But like someone who has done this before, they understand, okay, you know, I'm here to serve the piece.
You know who does that? Tim Burton and Danny Elfman. I feel like they both understand their storytelling styles, both from a music perspective and from a visual perspective, to the point that they just want to work with each other over again. Like, I feel like movies like The Corpse Bride or things that are very Tim Burton, you can't really separate Danny Elfman from Tim Burton. You know, like the movie is made through that kind of whimsical theme that, you know, everybody recognizes. So that kind of adds to the whole idea of like, you know, not only understanding kind of how to do it correctly, but also finding people that match that same idea or that same style, right?
Yeah, it's like when directors stick like the same DP or the same editor. They just understand each other like at a basis level.
Exactly. Like I can't think of like an Inception style theme to Coraline or something. Like it would be just weird, no. You know?
Can you imagine?
We should do an episode like that. Just mashups of like composers with the wrong director. Oh. That would be so funny.
You know, actually what I saw, like it was one of the big film Instagram accounts. I don't remember which one, but they had like famous like music scenes and they switched it. Like they put different songs and it is so weird. It's so weird.
I need to see that. Okay, we'll link it down below if we find it.
Actually, going back a little bit, when you brought up Spirit, I actually remembered, have you ever seen The Road to El Dorado?
Yes.
With Elton John.
Oh my god, I love them. Yeah.
When I tell you, I play that soundtrack even to this day over and over again. I love it. Like, he didn't have to go that hard, but he went that hard, you know?
It's beautiful in every way. The character design is also amazing, like animation.
No, yeah,
stuff.
It's great. Yeah, I guess talking on animation, Coraline too, it was, I think, one of those movies that really stuck out. I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. Bruno Klaus. I don't know how to pronounce his name fair.
No, it's fine. I don't know how to pronounce half.
At least from what I remember, maybe I'm completely wrong, but like the language in the film, like in the songs, isn't even a real language. Like it's all gibberish.
Why do you think he did that?
I guess because the movie itself is this very fantasy type place. It doesn't really matter what they're saying, right? The movie itself is about like lies and deceit. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. I didn't think it was any words. Oh yeah, creaking ban idli flaluba pretty salufe.
Is it Russian or is it gibberish?
It does not sound like Russian at all. Let me Google Translate. Google doesn't detect it. That does not sound like any language.
Right.
So I think you're right.
All right. Yeah, but I think trying to get back on track. I think like another good like animation, just like a whole studio as a whole is like Studio Ghibli.
Oh yeah.
And their soundtracks, unforgettable.
Their soundtracks are part of their personality, like we said at the beginning. Speaking of which, actually, let's talk about somebody that I didn't have on my list. Damien Chazelle. He's not really a composer, but he's one of those directors that understands music to like an intrinsic level, right? I think he used to be a musician.
Yeah.
And his movies, like you see La La Land and you understand the director has this just different or a bigger picture of what the soundtrack does for the movie, because not only does it work like perfectly with everything in the editing, but it creates kind of like, it helps with the emotional states of both of the characters, right? Of me and Sebastian, like they become part of the music. And even the cinematography, it's like, you know, that behind the scenes where Damien Chazelle is tapping the DP on the shoulder so that he like, you know, flips right before the beat, right?
Yeah.
He's filming for the music. And that just, for me, makes his movies go into such like a different level, just because like everything is way more cohesive because when he's writing and when he's like storyboarding, he's already thinking of how it's going to sound.
He has those songs in mind. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like, even though he's not a composer, I feel like we have to kind of mention him.
Yeah, another person I think is definitely like Tarantino.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I think it was him. He's like, I have like the whole soundtrack before I even start writing, you know?
Yeah, I think it's honestly a personal thing because I'm trying to look up kind of like processes and they're all different. So I think it depends. Personally, for me, like for things that aren't commercial, I always find the music before I edit it, simply because I feel like the power that the music can bring while you're cutting not only helps you like know when to cut, but also helps you make sure that you're carrying the emotion correctly. Oh, another great movie. Let me look up who's, but another kind of like a super, super memorable soundtrack is the one from Lady in the Water.
Lady.
Do you remember it?
I don't.
Maybe it's not. Let me see who composed it.
Not that memorable.
I'm mentioning it so that I can put the sound out because I love that composition. Like it's absolutely beautiful. James Newton Howard, of course. Okay. So he's one of the big ones too. So he did a bunch. He did all the Hunger Games, Dark Knight.
He did King Kong.
So like he's really well known as well.
Oh, another big one. One that I think it was definitely like another moment where I noticed the soundtrack immediately was Moonlight, Nicholas Britell. I think I was watching a little interview before this and he was talking about like he was cutting the music in almost like a hip-hop sort of rhythm, which I thought was incredible because you listen to like I think it's called like In the Middle of the World or Stuck in the Middle of the World, one of his tracks, and it's so haunting and you would never think, oh, it's coming from like this hip-hop upbeat, a lot of energy type of place, but it if you listen closely, it has like those sharp, you know, little beats into it, which is really, really cool to hear him say that.
I didn't even notice,
right?
That you're mentioning it. That's crazy. That's also, I don't have any examples for that, but there's a couple of people that I feel like are also really keen on it bringing up the emotion by putting music that's completely the opposite of what it should be. The best example that I have is Insidious.
Okay.
I don't know if you ever saw the trailer for that, but they have like really creepy imagery, very like traditional horror. But the song that they put under is Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
Okay.
By Tiny Tim. But if you heard it like separately, you'd be like, okay, it's just sound in the song. But combined with the visuals of horror, that just gives it like a more eerie feel that I feel like you couldn't really do with like the traditional risers and the tension builders that you always see with horror movies. So I feel like, you know, having that juxtaposition of like something really fun and whimsical with something really creepy and scary heightens the scariness of it, right?
Yeah, like the opening of Get Out. I don't know if you remember.
Exactly. That exactly. Literally like that. So it's stuff like that which is, you know, playing on with the dynamics. And back to what we were saying, that people have like emotional attachments to certain songs. They also have a certain sound.
Yes.
Right? Which is why you can hear like the weird creaking violins in a lot of like the soundtracks for horror movies, right? And you can hear a lot of the synths in like, you know, romantic movies and stuff like that. So it's also a play on attribution and on ability for someone to kind of like remember what something feels mm-hmm. like, if that makes any sense. So that also kind of guides the composition, right?
Yeah.
Which, okay, let's talk about that, actually. The whole idea about, like, attribution. How do you feel about movies that use famous songs from really famous people that are outside of, like, the film world to, like, use it as their soundtrack? Perfect example, stuff like Yesterday, which is a fictional narrative based on songs from the Beatles, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's helpful to the story or not?
I think it all depends. I think it's funny that you bring up Yesterday, because automatically I go to Across the Universe, which again is, it's all Beatles songs, but like they build a unique narrative around them. And I think it all depends, because I didn't watch Yesterday. I wasn't interested. I don't know how well it did.
It's fine. You didn't miss much.
Yeah.
But listen, no, to me, like personally, right? Unless it's kind of like what we said with Rocketman or Bohemian Rhapsody, which are kind of like semi-biographical storytelling based on, you know, the lives of the artists whose songs we're listening to, mm-hmm. right? Those aside, I don't really like when people use modern or like well-known songs, because I feel like it takes you out of it.
Really?
Right? Because here's the thing. Like, to me, there's a lot of songs, especially, for example, with Yesterday, right? I listen to those songs outside of the context of that movie, right? And I attributed different memories and different emotions to mm-hmm. it, right? And then when I saw the movie and I started listening to those songs, I started attributing the memories and the moments in which I heard them that have nothing to do with the movie during the movie. And okay. to me, that hurts the whole kind of like purpose of the soundtrack, which is to kind of dive you deeper into the story. And to me, it takes me out of it, right? Because I'm looking at this guy in a, you know, world where the Beatles don't exist, singing songs that I love, right?
Yeah.
And then they brought in Ed Sheeran and things no. like that. So it's like, like I couldn't, like there were too many references outside of the movie for me to actually be fully immersed.
Yeah, hearing it, I think they just did it the wrong way. Because, like, Where's My Mind by the Pixies and Fight Club? I feel like any other different song in that, it doesn't have, like, that nostalgia feeling. Like, after you watch Fight Club, you, like, automatically hear that song. You're like, okay, I remember Fight Club.
Right, okay.
I think it's all, like, a personal thing. It's a big risk that I think the filmmakers have to do. Because again, like you said, everybody has like their own emotions attached to certain songs. It's just a risk you gotta take, I think. Like Stuck in the Middle with You by Steeler Wheels in Reservoir Dogs. Like that scene where like he's cutting off the guy's ear. I can't imagine that scene with a different song. Or like in Goodfellas when you see Robert De Niro there smoking at the bar. Like Sunshine of Your Love by Cream. Like those scenes, like without those songs, like automatically. So yeah, I think popular songs, when they're used correctly and not in this gimmicky I'm trying to make money, you guys are gonna watch it, I'm forcing you, I know you're gonna watch it type of way, it works for sure.
True. I mean, okay, yeah, you're right, I'll give you that for sure.
It just has to be authentic.
Yeah, you have to like do it for the story and do it for the scene. Because if not, you know, like you said, it turns gimmicky. And then that's when I start, you know, screaming Yesterday. Who else do you have on your list?
Definitely The Godfather. Like the horns when it comes in and everything. Oh, another point that I wanted to bring, just to bring back one of the movies that we talked about way earlier. But like The Lobster, we talked about it a little bit. But like the importance of like musical cues that movies can use. Like, you hear the sound and you automatically know, like, okay, this is going to happen. Or,
like, something's up. Yeah. Yeah, for, like, foreshadowing, you mean, like, for music.
Exactly. Yeah, and again, like, you were talking about, like, the director has to be smart enough and knowledgeable enough to be like, okay, when it comes to the editing, this is what's going to signify. They already have to have that in their head, or you're going to go looking crazy in post, you know?
No, for sure. No, absolutely. I feel like they really help set the pacing and mm-hmm. the style for a bunch of other departments. And I don't know if people really think how important that is, you know? I mean, bottom line, if I were to kind of give this a summary kind of thing, I feel like soundtrack is not an afterthought. It can't be.
Never.
So yeah, I can't live without soundtrack. My playlists are movie soundtracks. Like when I go running, I listen to soundtracks. That's why Alexander Desplat is my man. Because he like relaxes me at the same time, but also motivates me, you know, to keep doing my exercise, right? If I want something like really hardcore, okay, here you go. Ready?
Go, go.
Gym playlist recommendations, okay? when you want to just have like a chill time, maybe like a cool down kind of 15 minutes, I would recommend Alexander Desplat or Danny Elfman, right? To kind of give you kind of that energy. If you want somebody to like really motivate you to like do those deadlifts or whatever you do, I would recommend James Newton Howard and Hans Zimmer. And then if you just want to forget about everything and just listen to things that you've listened to before, he's John Williams. He does everything that you ever
loved.
Yeah. I feel like we've touched on a lot of movies. For people that are just getting started, I feel like the people that we mentioned are really good, right? Hans Zimmer, Danny Elfman, like I said, John Williams, Alexander Desplat, James Newton Howard,
Philip Glass, we didn't touch on.
Oh, but yeah. Also look him up. He's great. And I think that's a great start. I think if you start looking people up, you'll learn to find the ones that you like.
Yes, for sure.
We'll link everything down below if anybody wants to listen to it. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Anyways, final thoughts, Kat.
Yeah, you know, music is important. Like I mentioned, film is audiovisual. Without the audio, you have nothing.
I mean, you have the visuals.
Just a bunch of pretty pictures. Just a bunch of pretty pictures.
Yeah. No, it's true. But yeah, so I hope you guys learned something. I hope that you guys go listen to the soundtracks after.
Yes.
And, you know, you pay attention a little bit to you know, the names behind the curtain, if that makes any sense. Because everybody knows directors. Everybody knows DPs. Nobody knows composers or editors, for that matter. But that's fine. I'll get over it. but yeah, it's, you know, it's part of it. So I feel like it's important to know.
Yeah, thank you guys for joining us. Make sure to follow us on RPBP Podcast on Instagram, Anchor, Spotify, Google, everywhere. Tune in and hopefully we catch you on the next episode.
No, we for sure will catch you on the next episode because it's episode 10.
Woo! That's right.
Yeah.
Episode 10.
All right. See you guys in episode 10 then. All right.
Bye-bye.
This podcast is brought to you by no one. Are your Chipotle, please sponsor us before someone else does. Voiced by your hosts, Catherine Mairena and Fernanda Lamuño. Original music by Alec Dreith and Sadiq Dasoon. Graphic design by Natalie Mairena. Copyright 2020 RPBP Podcast.